Ladies and gentlemen, this is Wally Butterworth, hoping to alert you about the most deadly crisis that confronts every man, woman, and child in the United States. It is the dangerous, unsound, and even bogus money you're carrying around in your wallets. Oh, we know there isn't a single person listening who wouldn't like to have $1 million in his wallet right now. But that is only because unscrupulous private international bankers who own and control the value of our money haven't yet pulled the string and foreclosed on every one of you and your government as well. The very first six paragraphs of the Constitution under Article 1, defining the powers granted by the Constitution to Congress, concern money. Paragraph 5 of Section 8, Article 1 says, quote, Congress shall have the power to coin money and regulate the value thereof and of foreign coin and fix the standard of weights and measures, unquote. The American people have got to force their government to take back the ownership and control of all United States money or our country is doomed. In this recording, we're going to tell you exactly how to do it, for you have to do it, legally and constitutionally. If you don't, your life savings are going to be wiped out, and so will your homes and businesses, and your children will grow up in slavery. Our program begins in the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. You will first hear the words of the greatest American patriot of modern times who wouldn't betray his country or sell his soul to the devil to gain millions. He is Congressman Lewis T. McFadden of Pennsylvania, for 10 years chairman of the House Banking and Currency Committee. Pay close attention to his words and write for them. They are printed both in booklet form and in the Congressional Record. Quote, Mr. Chairman, we have in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Board and the 12 Federal Reserve Banks. The Federal Reserve has cheated the government of the United States and the people of the United States out of enough money to pay the nation's debt several times over. This evil institution has impoverished and ruined the people of the United States, has bankrupted itself, and has practically bankrupted our government. Some people think that the Federal Reserve Banks are U.S. government institutions. They are not government institutions. They are private monopolies which prey upon the people of these United States for the benefit of themselves and their foreign customers, foreign and domestic speculators and swindlers, and rich and predatory moneylenders. In that dark crew of financial pirates are those who would cut a man's throat to get a dollar out of his pocket. There are those who send money into states to buy votes and control our legislatures. These 12 private credit monopolies, the 12 Federal Reserve Banks, were deceitfully and disloyally foisted upon this country by bankers who came here from Europe and repaid our hospitality by undermining our American institutions. Not a dollar can be put in circulation among our people by their government without the consent of and on the terms fixed by these 12 money trusts. And yet this Federal Reserve is not producing a loaf of bread, a yard of cloth, a bushel of corn, or a pile of cordwood by its check-kiting operations in the money market. The United States has been ransacked and pillaged. I charge that the Federal Reserve Board is putting the U.S. government in debt to the extent of $100 million a week. And with this money, they are buying our government securities for themselves and their foreign principals. I charge them with having taken $80 billion from the U.S. Treasury in 1928 alone. I charge them with having looted the U.S. Treasury of over $200 billion. End of Congressman McFadden's words speaking in Congress. We'll come back to the fiery speeches of this great American patriot, this fearless and loyal Congressman McFadden of Pennsylvania. But is it any wonder that he died under mysterious circumstances? One shooting and two poisonings, the last of which got him. Every man who has ever attacked the private power of these moneylenders has either died mysteriously and suddenly, or was defeated in his bid for re-election to public office. It is high time the American people investigated this game, which two people can play, by the way. Before the Federal Reserve Act was first passed by Congress under the betrayer Woodrow Wilson on Christmas Eve of 1913, when all the congressmen had gone home for the holidays, the American people had paid no interest on United States money. Our government only owed about $1 billion. Today, it pays these private international bankers $12.25 billion of dollars a year in interest alone. And the government doesn't owe these bankers one dime. You know how much $1 million is. Think of it. 12,000 millions of dollars these international bankers of the Federal Reserve loot from the U.S. Treasury every year, and they go scot-free. Those interest charges alone would more than cut your income tax in half. In fact, the repurchase of the capital stock and the cancellation of the Federal Reserve for less than $450 million, which Uncle Sam has a right to do at any time under the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, could easily eliminate income tax altogether. It would save American taxpayers at one stroke $12.25 billion a year in interest. None but either a fool or a paid-off traitor would refuse to make such a purchase. Let's face it, the American people today are the dumbest people on earth. Will somebody please tell us what we're doing carrying around phony Federal Reserve money that doesn't really belong to the United States government? Money that has no backing in either gold or silver? Money that belongs to a gang of private loan sharks who are mostly foreigners? Money which is a spurious IOU, a promise to pay of these scoundrels, which they cannot and will not redeem in lawful money, gold or silver. The United States does not own one share of stock in the Federal Reserve System. That stock is owned by foreigners, the Rothschilds of London and Berlin, Lazarus Brothers of Paris, Kuhn, Loeb & Company of Germany and New York, Warburg & Company of Hamburg, Germany, the Israel Moses Seif family of Italy, and last but not least, Lehman Brothers, Goldman & Sachs, and the Rockefellers of New York. These are the swindlers who collect interest on every dollar printed by the U.S. Mints and Bureau of Engraving, and they never gave, loaned, or supplied one dime of it to Uncle Sam. Furthermore, this Federal Reserve pays no income tax, and there has been no public audit of the Federal Reserve books for exactly 50 years of its existence. It is the deadliest enemy this country has today. To gain control of world money for themselves, these bankers are directly responsible for the death of more than 30 million Christians. Your sons, husbands, and fathers in World Wars I and II, and the Russian Revolution and murder of the Tsar and his family and all of the nobility to establish communism was financed under Trotsky by New York bankers, Kuhn, Loeb & Company, to be exact, Jacob Schiff by name, the infamous grandfather of Dorothy Dolly Schiff, who runs the New York Post. And it's all set to happen here just as in Russia. We read you now the U.S. Senate Committee Report number 346, quote, "The responsibility for World War I rests solely upon the shoulders of international financiers. It is they upon whose head the blood of millions of dying rest," unquote. And you, dear people, thought your fathers and the French thought their brave poilus and the English thought their Tommy lads all died to save democracy, meaning, by the way, rule of the rabble. Nonsense. They died for international bankers. They died because of the words Federal Reserve Note printed on the phony money in your wallet instead of the glorious words United States Certificate. If these words shock you, then we're satisfied. for your loved ones departed will be smiling that you have awakened at last. Our statements are gospel truth and supported by the greatest financial minds of our age. Now you will hear one of them speak in his own voice. On August 25, 1957, House Member Usher L. Burdick of North Dakota of the Banking and Currency Committee of the House again was interviewed on the radio show Face the Facts in Washington. That was 8 years ago. You will hear Congressman Burdick say that the U.S. government then was paying these bankers interest charges of $7 billion a year. Today it is over $12 billion. In fact, the traitors of Congress have just hiked the national debt another $9 billion to an all-time high of $324 billion, and which Lyndon Johnson approved to give these bankers an added $270 million a year at 3%, and they get much more than 3%. But listen now, ladies and gentlemen, to Congressman Burdick.
Congressman, there's a general understanding in this country that the Federal Reserve System is owned by the federal government. Is that true?
No, it is not.
Well, who does own the Federal Reserve
System? It's owned by private individuals.
I see. If this Federal Reserve System then is owned by private people or by private banks, how are they able to use this private ownership to their advantage?
Well, they use it in the extending credit to the government and in securing currency in the place of government bonds.
How does this come about?
Well, for instance, the government wants to sell $1 billion worth of bonds. They sell it to the banks, usually in New York, and don't get any money for it, but they get credit on the books of the bank and deliver bonds to the same amount to them, drawing interest, government bonds. And then these same bankers, in order to have some cash on hand, take the same identical bonds back to Washington and get currency for it by paying a small charge for the issuance of money. And in the meantime, the government collects the interest on these bonds and delivers it over to the banks, and that's what they make out of it.
Even though the banks have brought down these bonds to Washington, in order to get the currency for them, the banks still collect the interest on
the
bonds.
Oh, yes.
Well, Congressman Burdick, seems to me to be exactly what John C. Calhoun described as giving the banks the government bonds for nothing and borrowing it back again at interest, giving the banks the government credit for nothing.
That's precisely the situation.
Well, Congressman Burdick, what alternatives does the government have to submitting to this bank racket?
Well, we've only had one president in the United States with nerve enough to go up against this system, and that was Lincoln in the Civil War. When they wanted money to finish the war, the bankers decided that the government would have to pay 6% for any money they wanted. And Lincoln and his Secretary of the Treasury decided that they'd issue the money direct. And at that time, they issued $431 million worth of greenbacks, known as the Lincoln Greenbacks. They were not backed by bonds. We didn't pay any interest on it. And the amount still outstanding on that issue is $346,681, on which we have never paid a cent of interest since 1864.
Well, that's $300 some million of...
That's right.
I see. And... this then would be a form of what Congressman Pound called back in, I think, 1878, non-interest-bearing public debt in circulation as currency.
That's correct. And there's nothing behind a bond that isn't also behind a bill issued by the government. It's the credit of the government in each case.
In other words, what Lincoln did that, say, no other president has had courage enough to do was to issue non-interest-bearing dollar bills where everybody else had surrendered to the bank racket and issued interest-bearing government bonds.
Now, at this time, in 1957, if we attempted to redeem this money that was issued by Lincoln, called greenbacks, it would take over $1 billion to pay the interest on that fund.
Well, if we had issued it in the form of bonds initially.
Yeah, that's right.
In other words, Lincoln's courage in issuing $300 million worth of currency has saved us in the meantime over $1 billion worth in interest.
That's right.
Congressman Brigg, how many of your colleagues do you think in the House are onto this bank racket?
Well, I'd say that there was a minority onto it, but not the great majority.
Well, if it's a minority of the Congress, doesn't this mean that the general ignorance in the Congress with regard to this racket means that the Congress is incapable of upholding Article 1, Section 8, Clause 5 of the Constitution, which says that the Congress shall have the power to issue money and regulate its value?
Yeah, that's due to that and then to the public opinion. The public opinion is wrong about this, and the congressmen usually follow public opinion. If the public generally knew the situation, the congressmen would be all right, because they'd follow out the wishes of their constituents. But the constituents don't know anything about this, or very much.
I see. Well, then that means that it's a question of educational programs.
That's right. That's right.
And the situation we're dealing with is what John Adams referred to as downright ignorance of the nature of coin, credit, and circulation.
I'd say that is correct.
In this respect, though, that means that by virtue of this widespread public ignorance, that the Constitution of the United States has been defiled in this respect, and the congressional power to issue money has been surrendered or passed over to private bankers for their exploitation.
Well, I'd like to ask some expert financier what there is behind a bond that isn't behind a bill. I don't know just what mental gymnastics he'd go through, but he'd wind up by having to admit there was no difference in the value of either, because there's nothing behind either one of them, the bond or the cash money certificate, except the credit of the government.
Well, wasn't this in effect admitted by the then chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, Mariner Eccles, in 1933, when he acceded that what the Federal Reserve used for buying $3 billion worth of government bonds was the Federal Reserve's right, as he called it, to issue credit?
That's right. No, we have gradually, through the years, surrendered the right described in the Constitution of the United States to regulate the value and coining of money. We've turned that over to the Federal Reserve system,
which is far from being a public institution, a private corporation.
That's right.
It operates under a congressional charter like...
Well, it operates just like the Bank of the United States operated when Jackson put them out of business.
Because
they're using the people's money for their own advantage.
And the same kind of institution, then, that John Calhoun also was.
That's right.
Against.
There's been no change.
Yes.
It's another breed of cats, but it's the same cat.
And it's a little bigger now.
Yeah.
Well, Congressman Brigg, in exercising this power, or the of buying government bonds for public credit, the bankers themselves, they don't have any money for buying these bonds, do they?
Why, no. We want to sell $4 billion worth of bonds, and we sell it in New York to those who haven't got a dime, and they don't need any money because they simply enter credit to the government on their books.
I see.
Then before much money is paid out, they get the currency because they bundle up those bonds and take them down here to Washington and get an equal amount of currency. Then they got the money. But they didn't have any money before the government gave it to them.
I see. And in the meantime, they're drawing interest from the government on all those $4
billion. And right now, on the public debt, I presume the annual interest charge is close to $7 billion, if not more, annually.
I see. Well, that's a pretty big piece of cake to be passing off to private bankers just for this particular bit of hat trick, isn't it?
That's right. And it's all a sleight of hand performance. It hasn't any substance to it. Only the fact that the Congress has abandoned its own right to regulate the value of money and issue it, they've surrendered that.
Well, that is what the American historian Alexander Del Mar referred to as the supreme domestic prerogative of government, isn't it?
That's right.
And this has been passed over to a bunch of private bankers for their own use.
And the first big step taken in surrendering the power of Congress to regulate the value of money was done when the National Bank Act was passed. That is the first program that was put through, because their national banks could issue currency, and that's what they wanted. And when the Federal Reserve Board was set up, they finished the job.
And they continued that same policy that was initiated in the National Bank
Act. That's right.
Well, now, Congressman, I hear it noised around in some quarters that if the Congress were to exercise its constitutional responsibility in controlling the nation's currency, that this would result in widespread inflation, that $275 billion worth of currency would cause us to have a credit expansion and an inflation similar to what Germany suffered after the First World War.
That doesn't hold water at all, because the value of a dollar and the value of a bond are identical. And if you issue $4 or $5 billion worth of bonds, that means $4 or $5 billion more money is gone into circulation by bringing the bonds to Washington and issuing the money. So there's no difference at all. There'd be inflation in either case if they issued more medium exchange than was necessary.
I see. And the only difference then between the constitutional procedure that you advocate and the procedure that has been followed since the National Banking Act is that we'd save annually about $7 billion worth of interest.
That's right. And then we'd save our own self-respect, because I hate to sit in Congress when I know that the power to control money is in the hands of Congress, and then see it controlled by national banks and the Federal Reserve Board.
Yes, and that is an extremely important domestic as well as political power, as is pointed out in the fight that Andrew Jackson had with the Second Bank of the United States.
That's right.
I think Van Buren in his autobiography points out that the influence of even that small predecessor of the Federal Reserve System, the influence of that institution was felt in the remotest frontier community. And I believe, Congressman, that in your account of the agricultural depression of 1920, you've shown very clearly where the influence of the Federal Reserve System has likewise been felt throughout the country.
Ever since we have any recorded history of use of money and the control of money, every czar that controlled money has said, every one of them, let me control the money, and I don't care who makes the laws.
And by that statement, I take it, these money czars would mean that if they are able to control the money, they can pretty well get what kind of legislation they want.
That's right.
I see. Well, that's a pretty direct admission of their recognition of the immense amount of political power that has been surrendered over to private interests in the form of abandoning the congressional prerogative to issue money.
And what surprises me, by following that process, we haven't lost the government completely.
Well, maybe we've lost it to a greater extent than many of our listeners would realize, Congressman.
Yes, the American people have lost control of their government. Let us here resolve to take it back again before we lose our shirts. Let us begin by taking back the ownership and control of our money and make our government keep that control for us in our name, the American people. Please turn this record over now and learn how you must do this job. You have to do it. It is all spelled out for you step by step by one who has spent many thousands of dollars and 26 years of life fighting for the American people to control our currency.